From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
You know me. I've marched with you in your parades, and you've marched in mine. I've spoken at your dinners. I've had coffee at your breakfasts. And when Democrats call, I come running. I've been a strong leader in our party, and we had the chance together to be a strong voice and move Illinois Democrats forward.
That is Robin Kelly. She's a congresswoman from Illinois, now the new Democratic State Party chair. And that's another position that was held by Michael Madigan. He's out of it. Kelly is in. We'll talk about what it means going forward. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He's an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us once again, Greg Hines. He is with Crane Chicago Business. And Greg, it's always good to have you with us.
Always good to be here with you.
Hannah, I'm going to start with you. Not everyone knows Robin Kelly. So for those that don't, fill us in on who she is.
Sure. Robin Kelly is this is her fifth term in Congress. She represents part of Chicago's South suburbs, called the Southland. And, her district reaches a little bit more down south up there. Kelly has been around politics for a long time. She also served in the General Assembly for several years in the mid-2000s. And, she's relatively well-liked among her colleagues. And, her pitch to the Democratic Party of Illinois was, I'm going to forge a new way forward. She, of course, was supported by U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, and I think that did a lot for her candidacy for the position. But no matter what happens, even if Chicago Alderman Michelle Harris had won her bid to become chair of DPI, it still would have marked a huge transition either way, away from 23 years of the party under Mike Madigan. Either way, it's a Black woman serving the party and trying to bring it into the 21st century and changing the ways that fundraising is done and how Democrats from every level are kind of engaged with the party. But definitely an interesting week in Illinois politics, as I think we could probably say every week.
Well, Greg, this was not cut and dry that Kelly was going to win this this seat. So basically, what challenges does she face going forward? Because there was a lot of finagling behind the scenes.
Oh, there was all kinds of finagling behind the scenes. First challenge is to patch up things with J.B. Pritzker or the governor, and or in his case, patch up things with her. He's now had a series of defeats and high profile contests. He backed the losing candidate for president of the Senate, for instance. He lost his graduated income tax. The governor's going to have to figure out how to quit making mistakes like that, because eventually it's going to catch up with him. It could catch up with him this legislative session. So that relationship is worth watching. How Kelly handles fundraising, I think, is going to be particularly interesting. There was a legal memo that came out shortly before the election that suggested that that as a federal official, she couldn't get involved with raising any of the soft money that has largely fueled Democratic House candidates in recent years. She admitted that was true, or her lawyer did, but she said she'd work around it. We're going to involve other people in fundraising. What I found interesting, though, was that she said, and Michelle Harris said, interestingly, that in terms of fundraising, the state party's future is not in raising a ton of money from soft money from the traditional sources that would be labor unions, but replicating it at the state level, the Act Blue stuff that's occurred nationally, where going digital and raising money directly from individuals as opposed to organizations. If that actually happens, that's going to change things in Springfield, because the clout of the unions with Democratic caucus has always been, we raise most of your money. Well, if they're raising their money from somebody else, maybe that paradigm changes.
Well, Charlie, last week we talked about how a whole generation has come of age, really, with Madigan, not only as House Speaker for much longer, but really he's been in this role as a state party chair for quite a while, too. And with this change happening in the state party, maybe it's not as strong of a role as it was when Madigan held it, and it's going to probably operate a little differently. Your thoughts again on how this is going to work.
Well, it strikes me, yeah, it's not going to be as strong and as centralized as when Mike Madigan was the state party chair. But you could also say that Mike Madigan looked at being chair of the state party as a way to get cheaper postage rates for the mailers he sent out for House Democratic candidates. And whether we're Robin Kelly or Michelle Harris, the change, just the optics, now suddenly we have a woman of color heading the Democratic Party in Illinois, replacing an old white guy. And I use that term for Mike Madigan, even though I'm several months older than he is. And you have a woman from the suburbs. Her congressional district, more than half of it, is in the south suburbs. She also takes in maybe a quarter of her district involves the southeast side of Chicago. She also has all of Kankakee County. She's the only congressperson for that entire county. And so, as she pointed out, she is familiar with the urban and suburban and rural, and she has a perspective that will maybe play better statewide. And I think the idea, as Greg mentioned, that the fundraising is going to change too, and it's not going to be the same heavy reliance. Now, in the coming election in 2022, obviously Governor Pritzker is going to, should he choose to run again, and I'm assuming he will put in a ton of money and probably outspend anybody else. And the question is, how much will he give to the Democratic Party statewide to help elect other candidates? But I think there's the prospect of building up a grassroots organization, as Greg mentioned, using the small dollar contributions to put together a viable operation that will serve the Democrats well going forward.
Greg, going back to J.B. Pritzker, you discussed there a series of high-profile defeats, I guess maybe the right word for that. How does this, you said it might hurt him even in this session. How so?
Well, you know, as Charlie in particular knows, getting what you want out of the legislature is a little bit of a stick and a little bit of a carrot, even when it's your own party dominates things, because there's always disagreements over what should be first, what priorities, what should be de-emphasized, and so forth. The governor has some controversial proposals, some tax loopholes, for instance, that Chris Welch, the new speaker, has indicated he's not totally sold on. So the governor's going to want to be in a strong bargaining position. Well, when you continue to lose high-profile races, when you put your chips on the table and you come up short, it makes legislators think in the back of their brains, and maybe the front of their brains too, that, well, why do I have to worry about this guy? What's the penalty for crossing him? That's the problem. There's always things of consequence that come up with the legislature. There's always going to be disagreements, and a governor wants to be in the strongest bargaining position. Well, right now he's not.
Well, Hannah, Dick Durbin, we discussed him as well, the fact that he had backed Kelly. Does he come out of this stronger in some way with the Democrats in Illinois?
You know, I can't say just now. I will say from the outside, it looks like he is in a stronger position than he was earlier this week. But, you know, when you go back to the way that Mike Madigan ran the party for many, many years, you know, he used it as basically a vehicle to elect, you know, he didn't just concentrate on the General Assembly. He specifically concentrated on electing more House Democrats, which increased his own power in the House. And then, you know, Dick Durbin built up over the years this competing sort of, you know, Democratic County Chairs Association, you know, because he wasn't really given entree into the Democratic Party of Illinois. And so, you know, a more, you know, I don't know how it is in other states. I've never covered another state. I'm from Illinois. But a more, you know, comprehensive You know, this is how, like, integrating people who are running at different levels of government, if, you know, that might be beneficial because that's how voters perceive. They don't, you know, very few voters actually, you know, care and know about Springfield. And so voters perceive things in a more kind of flat way. And if you know, if they want to do fundraising, like Greg said, like the Act Blue model of, you know, that's been fairly successful for Democrats on a national level, you know, then they might try that. Small dollar donation is something, it's interesting to me, you know, across both parties. But there's some interesting research that I would point to that says small dollar donations actually kind of fuels polarization. And, you know, it's kind of an interesting cycle there. But we'll see. I mean, no matter what, with Mike Madigan gone at the top of the party can't keep operating the way it has. And I think that most people aren't really interested in the way that the party has been operating for years, because, you know, as our friend and colleague Rich Miller points out constantly, the party had also been, you know, kind of a discount mail rate kind of operation, because the party had used what some might criticize as these antiquated mailers for years and years, and they got discount postage. So, you know, I think lots of people are excited about a Democratic Party that does more than that.
Yeah, Greg.
I would say too that it, in terms of Governor Pritzker, yeah, it's probably kind of publicly embarrassing when he's not able to assert himself as the leader of his party, as many other governors are in a lot of other states for their particular political party. But on the other hand, he's still got a lot going for him. For one, he's got lots of money. For the other, as governor, he has the ability to veto bills, obviously. And I think maybe more behind the scenes, if you will, there's a huge capital program that's out there with projects in everybody's district. And the language in those appropriation bills typically says, in layman's terms, that these projects don't get released to be done without the governor's okay. And I would argue that that gives him leverage over a lot of people, where he can come in and say, well, you really want this stretch of road. I really need your help on this bill. And if you can't help me on that bill, gee, I don't know if I'm going to be able to help you on that road. So I think you'll see some of that as well.
So if Pritzker took a loss here, possibly, at least it seems that way, Greg, Durbin was a winner. So again, does Durbin, you know, what does he gain from this?
Well, I mean, he certainly gains a little bit of influence, but the senator has always wanted to have more power over the state party. I think there was a little quiet jostling between him and Mike Madigan, but Dick didn't pursue it very much because it was obvious that Madigan was in the stronger position. What I think he gets, frankly, is a personal satisfaction. He's having the best life of his political career here. He just his candidate just won for state party chairman. He has a president he can work with, and he's a committee chairman for the first time in his career. Not just any committee, but the committee that makes and breaks the Supreme Court justices and federal court judges. So he can advance his longstanding priorities there, like immigration reform. I suspect most of this is, well, there's some increase in power. I suspect most of this is just Dick feels really good right now. I don't blame him.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. Well, moving on from the Democrats, Hannah, Adam Kinzinger, who's really been outspoken, especially against his own party in recent months, he has now a Republican opponent who has announced for the upcoming election in a year. So let's talk about Kinzinger for a moment. Does he face some real possibility of losing in a Republican primary? Because we know that it tends to be more conservative candidates do better in those primaries.
Well, yes, that is true. But there are still a lot of unknowns. You know, Kinzinger's current district, you know, it's drawn in a way where I think he could, you know, stave off a conservative for the primary, but you know, now we have remapping later that'll go on later this year, and so we don't know how his district will shape up. But Catalina Loff, I think I'm saying her last name correctly, she came in third last March in a 7-way, I believe, primary for the 14th congressional district. And she's come out with, you know, a campaign saying that Adam Kinzinger is, you know, saying that he wants to rid the Republican Party of the pro-Trump, you know, far-right elements, that's, you know, anti-patriotic, anti-American, blah, blah, blah. So she wants to, I guess, move to the 16th district to challenge him, though, again, we don't know what the future boundaries of those districts will be. But, you know, Kinzinger, this is now, it's been, we're taping this Friday, it's been nearly 2 months since the Capitol insurrection that I think, you know, he had been semi-willing to be vocal prior to January 6th, you know, after the election, after Trump, you know, kept insisting that he had won and that there was quote unquote massive voter fraud that, of course, there is no evidence of. But, you know, I really think that January 6th galvanized him, and he came out with his Country First Political Action Committee. I think that was January and or maybe early February. And he's now into 2 months of this crusade. And what some might have written off at first as kind of like a media stunt that might go away, it sounds like he's got some staying power, and he knows what lane he's in, and we will see how it plays out. I think there's definitely a lot of Republicans that are hungry for his message, that are hungry for the message of, you know, let's get, you know, the GOP back to where it was, the party of Reagan. You know, let's talk about policy and not this made up culture war. But of course, there's a lot of people who were energized by Trump and people like Trump and the things that they were talking about, you know, kind of people who maybe for the first time in their life, they were engaged and excited by the democratic process. And, you know, definitely people have been turned off by Trump in the last 4 or 5 years. But I think there are still a lot of people who they want to be involved, and they don't take people like Adam Kinzinger saying that this is not what the Republican Party should be. They don't like him saying that, because for the first time in their lives, the Republican Party is exactly where they feel at home.
Kissinger actually was a pretty solid supporter of Donald Trump until after the election, and Trump came out with this total line of malarkey that the election was stolen, and he duped a lot of people who are otherwise intelligent into believing it. As a matter of fact, Kinzinger's own family, some of his family members, disowned him and said how embarrassed they were because he voted to impeach Trump. Now, Kinzinger told a reporter for a national publication that had it been a secret ballot, there was something like 150 Republicans would have voted to impeach Trump for what he did. But most of them are afraid of that energized base, as Hannah said. And I would guess, no matter what the map looks like, Loeff is going to run against Kinzinger. And in Illinois, and I guess it's probably true elsewhere, but in Illinois, you can run in any congressional district you want to. You don't have to live there.
Well, Kinzinger may have made a few, I don't call them friends on the Democratic side, but some people who applauded how he came out against Donald Trump. But Greg, that's he's still a conservative, and he's more conservative than a lot of Democrats would like. Depending on the map, of course, and how that plays out for him, is he in some trouble here, possibly?
Oh, he's definitely going to have an interesting future if he decides that he wants to try to stay in the U.S. House. You are correct. He voted this week against the big election reform bill that cleared the House. He voted against the criminal justice reform bill that cleared the House. Any Democrat running against him is, or any Democrat who's thinking of voting for him in a Republican primary by crossing lines, is going to be reminded of that at great length in the future. I don't know that Adam has figured it out yet. I think he's going to wait logically and see what his new district looks like. It's going to be interesting to see whether Democrats who are going to draw the map decide to go after him or decide to go after Rodney Davis or Ray LaHood or somebody down, Darren LaHood or one of the downstate folks. But Adam Kinzer increasingly comes across to me as a guy who's just kind of, he's not worried about his political future right now. This isn't part of a plan. He's just going to stand up and beat his chest and say what he thinks and let the chips fall where they are. It's refreshing. You don't see that very often in politics.
Let me turn to the economy, and Greg, I'll go back to you. You wrote a column this week that asked the question, when will Illinois regain jobs lost to COVID? So I guess my question would be, when will that happen? Do we know?
Well, if you believe Moody Analytics, which is a pretty good firm, they tend to know what they're doing. Their projection is not until at least 2023. We're going to bounce back a little bit now, but as we have been in recent years, increasingly, we're not only going to lag the country, but we're going to lag the rest of the Midwest. That's kind of distressing because, you know, generally Michigan and Illinois and Ohio, industrial states, all with a kind of factory background, all kind of moved together as a group. Well, increasingly lately, we've been falling a little bit farther behind them too. And Moody suggests that the number one reason is the state's fiscal situation, that we can't solve our yawning fiscal gap on the pension side, $144 billion by the last count in unfunded liabilities, maybe more as Moody's counts it, and that makes businesses not want to move here because they don't know what's coming. They're worried that if they move in, their property tax is going to go up, their income tax is going to go up, they're going to get whacked some other way. And Moody's strong suggestion is that until the state seriously deals with this one way or another, gets rid of the liability, that our ability to attract jobs and investment is going to be slower than other states, even though we have a lot to offer.
Yeah, Charlie, taking that into account and that prediction from Moody's, your thoughts on this as far as the next couple of years here in Illinois?
Well, I think the message that Moody delivered in his most recent report is similar to the one that they've been delivering year after year to the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, which asks Moody Analytics to take a look at Illinois and do some brainstorming and see what the problem is. And as Greg said, it came down to our finances. On the other hand, balancing that off, and again, this is something that Moody says consistently, is our logistics, the fact that we're sort of the crossroads of rail traffic in Illinois. We have a major airport in O'Hare. We also have more highly educated workforce than our neighboring states. And Chicago is a world-class city. So those are all our positives, but what's holding us back is the fact that we don't seem to have our finances in order.
Hannah, one of the things Moody's also touched on this week was the state's pension debt, talking about, I believe, a record now that they say the state is headed toward of more than $300 billion in unfunded liability. Going ahead here, I mean, is there any discussion about trying to tackle this problem once again?
Yeah, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Pat Quinn standing up and saying he was, quote unquote, put on this earth to solve Illinois' pension crisis. And, you know, of course, the big fight over the huge pension reform bill back in 2013. And, of course, in 2015, when the Illinois Supreme Court unanimously struck it down, everyone started over from zero. And I still think that, you know, eight plus years on, there are some kind of scars from that still. But I have noticed that lately, especially Republicans, of course, they've been more willing to, you know, talk about the probable, inevitable, in their minds, you know, solution of changing Illinois' constitution because, you know, they read the Illinois Supreme Court's, 2015 opinion as pretty ironclad that Illinois' pension protection clause, it ain't going anywhere. So, I feel like I've seen a little bit more willingness to acknowledge that. Like, I haven't seen any full-blown, press conferences on it, but it's mentioned in passing here or there. So, and of course, the Illinois Policy Institute, which is very, very good at, you know, digital marketing and all of that stuff. You know, if they decide that they're going to take up this cause yet again, then I could see them altering public opinion on this issue in the coming years. But of course, the earliest that we could get another vote, of course, on constitutional amendment would be November 2022. And of course, that's when Governor J.B. Pritzker is going to have pretty good big fight on the ballot. You know, Tammy Duckworth is going to be at the top of the ticket too. I do see growing energy around the conversation, I will say, from the Republicans.
Greg, I got to ask this question. For those that aren't very good in math, they may wonder, how is the state continuing to put this money into the pension systems, making its payments each year, and still we seem to be falling behind? What's the problem there?
The problem is that we're putting in an amount set by state law, the statutory figure, but the statutory figure is not what the actuary says actually needed. There's a gap of about $3 billion a year between what we are putting in and what we should be putting in. As a result, what we owe continues to go up every year.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's go to you first.
Illinois continues to do a booming trade. I don't know if that's the right adjective, in recreational marijuana. Last month, February, our dispensaries sold more than $80 million in recreational pot. And at that rate, if you extend it out over the year, the total sales in 2021 are heading towards excess of $1 billion. And so that's an awful lot of reefer out there.
Okay. Greg?
Sean, we've all been collectively involved in a joint exercise in Hunger Games, otherwise known, how do I get my COVID vaccine, for a few weeks now. Well, the ground central for that is what's happening at the United Center, where 6,000 people a day are going to be vaccinated starting next week. The appeal right now is to senior citizens, and then it's going to go to other groups, particularly minority groups. We're finally turning the corner here. We're getting close to 100,000 vaccinations a day in the state, which is a lot. But we're not quite there yet.
All right. And Hannah?
Well, speaking of vaccinations, former Governor Bruce Rauner now lives in a pretty exclusive place in the Florida Keys. The governor there, Ron DeSantis, his administration has been doing these, I guess, pop-up vaccination sites. And what do you know, after these pop-up vaccination sites, DeSantis has raised $2.7 million into his campaign coffers, at 250 of which came from, Governor Rauner, and seems like he's gotten vaccinated at his pretty exclusive.
Just a coincidence.
Ocean Reef Club in the Florida Keys.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And don't forget to join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.